Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.
Welcome, everyone, from Sherman Oaks Studios in beautiful Sherman Oaks, California, and you are live listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block. I am your host today, JJ James DeMuse. The host, Jennifer, is in Maine right now. Her sister got married in this past Saturday. I want to say hello to the newlywed couple. And how are you doing today? I hope everything is okay with you guys. And we are here today with Arthur and Leonard Goldberg. And he is here to promote his two books, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes. Let me show you guys real quick. This is the first one right here. Take a good look. Looks very interesting. And the second book right here, A Study in Treason, also by Leonard Goldberg. That is the second in a series of books. And this line of, I guess this is something that you created for yourself?
Yes. Actually, I came on it rather accidental. I was watching a British TV detective story called Inspector Morse, and I always liked that, but that series had run its course. And last year, they had a younger Inspector Morse, and I said, oh, that must be his son.
Right.
And with that in mind, I thought, well, why don't I let Sherlock Holmes have a child? And rather than being a son, a daughter. Who happens to be like Sherlock Holmes.
Oh, that's good. So you kind of created this character your own.
That's never been written about, to my knowledge.
Oh, so I assume you put the patent on it also.
I guess.
Very nice, nice. So Mr. Goldberg happens to be a physician, an actual doctor, and he is also a professor of medicine where you were or still are.
Although I'm now retired, but I was a clinical professor of medicine at UCLA for many years.
And the connection is that he has 12 novels. And
this is actually 15.
15 novels. And a lot of his work has to do something in the medical field. Medical thrillers, I believe?
Yes.
Okay. And how long have you been writing?
25 years.
25 years?
Yes.
Wow, that's a good long time. What is the best, the most pleasure you get out of writing? The creativity or?
The creativity, but I like endings.
The endings of
it? Yeah, I think that to really make a novel sterling good, you've got to have a super good ending.
Okay.
There was once an old time mystery writer, his name was Mickey Spillane.
I've heard that name before. Yeah.
Mickey Spillane once said, nobody reads a book to get to the middle.
No, they don't. Absolutely.
So the beginning is important. Of course, that's when you interest people. But if you really want to tie them up and make them happy that they bought that book, then you got to have a really tight ending that they like.
Okay. So what you will probably do, I'm not saying, you will go through your book and you're like, okay, well, let me try different endings in your novels or?
Well, before I start to write, I pretty much know the beginning and the end.
Okay.
It's the middle that I let fly. I've never had an editor, and of course, all my novels go to the publisher, and I have an editor who carefully goes over everything. And I've never had an editor say, this is not a good ending. I've never had that. I've had one say, you killed this woman off 3 chapters ago. Maybe you should keep her alive and let her be part of the ending. And it's usually a pretty good suggestion.
Okay.
And I think people have a bit of a misconception of how a novel is written. They think somebody simply sits down at a desk, and writes away. And
that's what I think.
That's right. And then your wife comes in and says, are you almost done? And you say, oh, just one more word and I've got it. And oh, there, it's done.
Okay.
That's not how it goes. The way it really goes is you, the writer, usually goes through at least two drafts yourself.
Okay.
Then it goes to your editor.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know it's a perfect novel when it goes to him.
Right.
But when he gets, when you get that letter back, you understand it's really not so perfect. And it's not uncommon to go through two more drafts with your editor.
Mm.
So you look at a good book. You may have a good writer, but you also got a good editor. I can guarantee it.
All right.
And a movie here, I guess it was last year or the year before last, called Genius.
Okay.
And it was about an editor at Scribner. His name was Maxwell Perkins, and he was superb. He made the best of all editors. And whose novels did he edit? Ernest Hemingway.
Wow.
F. Scott Fitzgerald.
Wow, so, yeah.
So when you look at their novels today, you're looking at Maxwell Perkins' imprint on those novels.
On those novels.
Yeah.
Some of the greater writers in history. Oh, that's nice. So let's say you have 15 novels.
Yes.
Are you currently working on another one now, or are you just taking a break?
No. As a matter of fact, I'm almost finished the next one, which will be the third in this series. And I've just signed a contract for two more novels.
For
this
series?
The Daughter Sherlock Holmes series. So in the end, it'll be a total of 5 books.
Okay.
And maybe it'll go on after that. We'll see. So far, it's sold very well, and I've gotten very good reviews. So as long as people like it and we're selling books, I'll keep writing.
Keep writing them. Right. Why not? I've did some little researching, and it says your books have been translated into a dozen languages.
Actually, it's up to 15 now.
15 languages?
Yes.
So the stuff I'm getting into is actually late. Okay. 15 languages and more than 1 million copies.
Yeah.
Wow, man, that's really nice, man.
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I suspect that 1 million copies was maybe 5 or 6 books ago, and I suspect the number is well over 1.5 million now.
Okay. So let's talk about this first one right here, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes. This is like an introductory to her?
Yes.
This is
when she meets the Watsons, and the public begins to know that Herr Sherlock Holmes has a daughter.
Oh, all right. So, okay, tell us more about this book, this one right here.
Well, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes, the first half of the book deals with a mystery, but it also deals with how the daughter came about.
Okay.
If you read the Sherlock Holmes mysteries written by Arthur Conan Doyle, he's a very cold, emotionless guy.
Right.
He does not have time for romance or affairs. As Watson said, he refuses to be emotional because it might interfere with his thinking.
Right, okay.
So how does this cold, emotionless guy end up with a daughter? Well, it's a curious story. And it relates back to a story written by Arthur Conan Doyle called A Scandal in Bohemia, in which one day there's a knock on the door at 221 B. Baker Street, where Holmes and Watson live. And this is the original Sherlock Holmes.
Okay.
And who is at the door? None other than the King of Bohemia.
Oh, wow.
And the King of Bohemia says, I've got a terrible problem. I'm now engaged to the daughter of the King of Scandinavia. But last year, I had an affair with a woman called Irene Adler, who is a beautiful opera star. And some photographs were taken.
Uh-oh.
And she says that if I go ahead with this marriage, she's going to release those photos, which would be a scandal.
Right,
doing
right.
It. Mm-hmm. So he asked Sherlock Holmes, please arrange to get those photographs back. I don't care how you do it.
Okay.
If you can buy them, steal them, just get them back.
Yeah.
Well, Holmes tries, but Irene Adler outwits him.
Oh, wow.
And she is the only woman ever to outwit Sherlock Holmes.
That's nice, man.
Right. Anyhow, after the that episode is over, Irene Adler, who's very resilient, falls in love with a British lawyer, a dashing fellow named Godfrey Norton, and they flee to Paris, where they're going to live a life of ecstasy and romance.
Right.
But things don't go well. Things don't go well because Godfrey turns out to be a drunkard.
Oh.
And a bore. And a philanderer. And she's miserable. She can't even carry on a conversation with this guy. So here's this woman, Irene, very bright, keen mind, keen enough to outwit Sherlock Holmes. And she's married to a dullard.
Right.
Well, some months later, there's a knock on the door at 221B Baker Street. Watson has moved out. Now he's married and he's moved out. Sherlock Holmes opens the door, and who is it? It's Irene Adler. She says, I've just come to have a conversation with you. I need the intellectual stimulation. Well, Holmes is delighted, invites her in. They have a wonderful evening talking about everything under the sun. They drink brandy. They inject themselves with cocaine. And they end up in bed.
Right. That's what drinking and cocaine probably does to people.
And the next morning, Irene Adler is gone. Doesn't leave a note. No farewell. Gone. And to Sherlock Holmes, that's great. He doesn't want any.
He's emotionless anyway.
That's right. That's great. Enjoy your life. Stay away from me. 8.5 months later, there's another knock on the door.
Oh, boy.
And Sherlock Holmes opens the door, and it's Irene Adler, who's 8.5 months pregnant.
Ooh.
And Irene Adler is very sick. She's got something called toxemia pregnancy. Her blood pressure is sky high. Her kidneys are failing. She'll be dead in 2 weeks. And she's got to come back to Holmes to find somebody who'll care for this baby to be born.
Okay, yeah.
Now, Sherlock Holmes can't do it. He won't do it. Forget it. I mean, Sherlock Holmes, a father, just can't. But he sits down with Watson, and they come up with a possible solution. And the solution is, when that child is born, Watson will arrange for an adoption.
Okay.
Which they do. Unfortunately, Irene Adler dies shortly after giving birth. The child, Joanna, is raised by a nice couple called the Middletons. And as Joanna grows up, it's clear that she's very bright, that she's got an investigative mind. But nobody knows she's the daughter of Sherlock Holmes because the adoption records have been sealed. So Watson is the only person who knows, and he's not talking.
Right.
So here this girl matures and grows into a very successful nurse, and she doesn't know that she's the daughter of Sherlock Holmes. Later on in the book, she, of course, teams up with the Watsons, and they solve the mystery in the daughter of Sherlock Holmes. But for most of her life, she has no idea that she's the daughter of Sherlock Holmes.
Wow. That's really interesting to me, for you to take a famous character such as Sherlock Holmes and then, you know, what's the word I'm looking for? To open up, I guess, to create a whole character in a series of books from that famous character. You know, I don't know if anybody's ever done that before. Maybe they have, you know, I'm not for sure.
I'm certain it's been done. I can't give you an example right off hand, but I will tell you one of the very best reviews I got. And, you know, you got to be careful with reviews. Some reviews, you're the greatest writer the world has ever known.
Okay.
Another review, this guy can't write. I mean, where's the truth? Well, it's probably somewhere in between.
Okay.
But there was one review I got that stuck in my mind. Of course, the creator of Sherlock Holmes was Arthur Conan Doyle. And the reviewer said, Arthur Conan Doyle would be proud of Leonard Goldberg.
Oh, wow.
And I thought, you can't.
Yeah, he was proud.
You can't get any better than that. Thank you very much.
Do you read all of your reviews or critiques of your work?
I don't, but my publicist at St. Martin's Press does.
Okay.
And they will pick out the ones which are very, very good and put them on the cover of the book or what have you.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, if somebody gives a not-so-good review, they ignore it.
Wow. This is great. So as far as, you know, this other book, The Story and Treason, okay, this is, since this first one was the introduction, so this is basically a whole mystery in this book right here.
Right. Now, in the A Study in Treason,
mm-hmm.
Joanna has fallen in love with Watson's son.
Oh, wow.
John Jr.
Right.
And he is a distinguished pathologist at St. Bartholomew's Hospital. They fall in love and marry. So now living at 221B Baker Street is the elder Watson
mm-hmm.
and Joanna and her new husband, John. So it's Joanna and the two Watsons, and they form a team in A Study in Treason.
Okay, was they a team in the first book?
Oh yeah.
Okay, so they just this was kind of a mystery in the book, but it was an introduction to the characters.
Right, but in the second book, what happens is that Joanna's ability as an investigator, as a sterling detective, becomes known because her husband writes about it.
Okay,
just as his father wrote about Sherlock Holmes, so everybody begins to know. This Joanna is one terrific investigator. And in this book, A Study in Treason, there's a treaty between France and England, which has been stolen.
Okay.
And the reason this is important is that the year is 1914. The winds of war are sweeping over Europe. Every country is arming themselves because the war is imminent. Germany, under Kaiser Wilhelm, is building up a big navy because back in those days, whoever ruled the sea won the war.
Okay, yeah.
And England is aware of this, so England and France come together to form a treaty in which they will combine their most powerful parts of their naval fleet to confront the Germans as they come out of their ports, out of the Baltic Sea.
Hmm.
Now, this treaty has been agreed on, but it has not yet been signed.
Okay.
So now, if Germany finds out about this treaty, whoa, they'll get those battleships out quickly and all will be lost. So it's so important that Germany not know. And in this novel, A Study in Treason, they believe that somebody has stolen that treaty and plans to sell it to the Germans.
Oh, wow.
We bring in World War One,
okay,
which is again started in 1914, but it also adds a bit of history and background to the novel.
Right, you get a time, give people a sense of time, time of the year it is, what year
everything.
It is.
Okay, and in the novel that I'm writing now, I won't go into much detail about it because I won't until it's ready to be published, obviously, but. In one of the scenes, there's a blackout in London. And the reason there's a blackout is because Germany's sending over these dirigibles, these blimps,
okay,
which are bombing London.
Oh.
And they're using the lights of London as their target.
The targets, yeah.
So now London has to have these periodic blackouts. Whenever they hear that the blimps are approaching, there's a blackout. And you can imagine when everything goes black in London. It'd be like everything going black in Los Angeles. Don't see anything.
Right.
No lights, nothing. So it adds a character to the novel. And I think people not only want to know about the characters that you put in the novel, but they want to know about the times. What was happening then?
Oh, right.
What was it like? And you got to remember, this is 1914. Women were not allowed to be doctors or lawyers or architects or accountants.
Right.
They were shopkeepers or teachers or nannies.
Yeah.
Well, here we have Joanna, who's got this incredible mind. She don't want to be a shopkeeper.
No.
She don't want to be a nanny. But she does find something which appeals to her, and that is nursing. And she becomes a very, very skilled surgical nurse.
Right.
And of course, as a investigator, she can use those skills in the operating room, what have you. It is during that time that she meets Watson's son, John Jr., who's a surgeon. They meet, they marry, life is wonderful, but again, tragedy strikes, and John Jr., John Blaylock is struck down by cholera. So Joanna's left to raise her little son all by herself.
Oh, wow.
But all is not so bad because she now lives in the mansion of Lord Blaylock, who's her father-in-law, and Lord Blaylock is an aristocrat, who has real wealth and standing. So she has a comfortable surrounding, but her heart has still been broken, and you can't get around that.
Okay. Did you create the Watson character, Junior Watson?
Yeah.
Okay. Wow.
In other words, what I've done is Sherlock Holmes has a daughter. Mm-hmm. It's the daughter of Sherlock Holmes. Watson has a son, Watson Jr. And the famous detective in the Conan Doyle novels, Lestrade, he has a son.
Okay.
So Lestrade's son, Sherlock Holmes' daughter, and Watson's son, they're all involved. It's taking it another generation forward.
Wow. You're like, what is it like? What is the name of that? Like the comic book characters? Like you creating another universe.
Yeah.
You know, you creating like the children of these famous people and stuff.
Well, I think if you want to really entertain people, you have to write about something nobody's written about.
Right.
Yeah. Now, there's certainly been more than enough novels written about the sons and daughters of famous people. I don't dispute that. But on the other hand, you often wonder, did these people, the sons and daughters of famous people, how did they turn out? Did
right.
they inherit their father's or their mother's brilliance or genes? Or was it the environment they were brought about? How did they get that way? Well, in Joanna's case, it's both. Obviously, she's got the good genes from her father, yeah, Sherlock Holmes, mm-hmm. and her mother, Irene Adler, who outwitted Sherlock Holmes, by the way.
Yes.
So she's got the good genes, but she's also raised in an environment that allows her to make these investigative abilities even keener, even sharper. So it's both hereditary and genetic. And in the opening of The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes, there's a saying I made up, which I rather like, and it says that the past shapes and defines us.
Right.
And it can neither be, can no more be changed than forgotten.
Oh, wow. That's really nice.
So you know mm-hmm. where you came from.
Yeah. That's really nice. We are here talking with Arthur and a physician, Mr. Leonard Goldberg. We'll be right back with a few words from our sponsors.
Hey, this is Desiree Duffy from Black Chateau Enterprises, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio, Channel 1, iHeartRadio, and iTunes.
LA Mayhem is super excited about their newest venture with MBM Music LLC. With MBM Music, we'll provide artists with a full-service platform to be seen and heard by assisting with necessary products, services, and fashion, all in an effort to increase exposure, fan base, and income. For more information, visit us at mbmmusicllc.com. That's mbmmusicllc.com. You create, we promote, plug in to the network.
This is Satanic Johnny, and you're listening to
Jenny's Real Talk on the Block, LA Talk Radio.
And iHeartRadio.
This is Gino Montesinos, and you're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio and iHeartRadio.
Okay, that was a word from a couple of our sponsors, and we are back with Arthur Leonard Goldberg, and we are here to talk about his books. This one right here, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes. This is an introduction book to The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes and the son of John Watson Jr., and the mysteries, and it's going to be in a series of books. Want everybody to take a good look at it, please. And so when you see it, go online. Is there any place in particular where they can go pick up these books at?
Most bookstores have them. And, of course, Barnes & Noble has them.
Okay.
And, of course, Amazon has them.
Oh, good, good. So it's all your major retailers.
Oh, yeah. As a matter of fact, this morning I stopped by Diesel Books in Santa Monica.
Okay.
And I once gave a book signing there, so they know me. And I stopped in and said hello, and they were happy to see me. And they said, look, while you're here, would you sign some books? And I said, of course. And I signed like a half a dozen books. And for some reason, people like to buy books that are signed by the author.
They oh, like yeah.
And it was, I like independent bookstores. It's like part of the neighborhood. It's so important that we get away from this big brother, big store, take a number and we'll ship you the book.
Right.
A good neighborhood bookstore like Diesel, you walk in and say, what's really good? And they know you like mysteries. And they will say, oh, you know who's coming out with a new novel? We just got copies of it. Daniel Silva's new novel. It's fantastic. And they tell you what's good, what's coming out. You don't get that in at Amazon. In Amazon, you're a number.
I went to, it's one I kind of like going to. It's been a while since I've been there on in L.A., north Vermont.
Yeah.
Up in Hollywood. I go up there every so often and check out the books up there. And they've got some hard-to-find books. I've been up in there. So I know what you're talking about as far as the independent and the smaller bookstores and stuff. They're able to get stuff there.
There was a bookstore in Brentwood called Dutton's. And it's now, unfortunately, it's either very small or gone. But everybody loved Dutton's, everybody, because they had books that went back forever.
Okay.
Forever. And they said in their back storage, they had 10 or 15,000 copies. Anyhow, I was writing this novel about a ship that was going to sink. And do you recall that movie, The Poseidon Adventure?
Oh, yeah, I've seen it. It was a great movie.
Great movie.
Yeah.
Well, the novel, Poseidon Adventure, was written by John Gallego. And that's what the movie is based on. And I saw the movie, and I enjoyed it immensely. I didn't enjoy the sequel as much as the original movie.
Right.
And I said, you know, I probably ought to read the original Poseidon Adventure. And I looked around at various bookstores, and I said, well, you know, we'll look for it, but, you know, it's out of print and this and that. Anyway, I went to Dutton's, and the fellow knew me, and he was always good to me. When my books would come out, he'd make sure that they were up front. And he said, let me look in the back. So he goes in the back. 10 minutes later, he comes back with a copy of The Poseidon Adventure.
Wow, that's, damn, that's terrible. Because, you know, I can imagine what he had to go through. You know, he's, you know.
Let me tell you, that man never threw away a book in his life. That I can tell you.
Right.
And he was a comfortable place. His store was a comfortable place for everyone. But unfortunately, the building where he had his store was taken over by a developer.
They
made it into an office building and this and that. And what was once a grand bookstore became like a little corner. And how grand was it? Well, it was a bookstore. And then if you wanted to read a book and see whether you liked it, he had a little patio courtyard.
Oh.
You go out there and read the book. Drink some coffee.
Okay.
Then come back and tell whether you liked the book or not.
Oh.
And people didn't take advantage of it. They said, you know, I like this book. I'm going to buy it. Or, you know, this is not my type of book. But the availability, the advantage of reading it before buying it, that is for a couple, three chapters. That happened at Dutton's bookstore.
Oh, so yeah.
That's what...
Like, you know, like a neighborhood.
Absolutely. It was... someone once told me it was like a neighborhood bar, except it was for books.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Very friendly, and the people knew you. I mean, when you walked in, they knew you, and they knew what you liked to read.
Yeah, they don't have places like that.
Gone.
They have one on in downtown, what is it called? The Last Bookstore. Have you been to that one?
No, I haven't.
It's on 5th Street and Spring.
Huh.
And they got all kinds of books. I believe it's more than one story. I'm not particularly sure. But I've went in there a couple of times, and they got like a lot of hard-to-find books. They got comic books, all kinds of different novels and stuff in there.
I ought to check that out.
Yeah, I think you should.
Because a lot of times books go out of print, and that's the end of them. Mm-hmm. You never hear or see them again.
Okay.
There's some who stay in print forever. Hemingway and Scott Fitzgerald and Harper Lee, who wrote To Kill a Mockingbird, which is, after the Bible, the most reprinted book in American history.
To Kill a Mockingbird?
So, Kill a Mockingbird. It's been reprinted 120 times.
Wow.
Interestingly, just to go back for a minute on how important an editor was.
Yeah.
When Harper Lee apparently first wrote Kill a Mockingbird, nobody was really interested in it.
Okay.
They just didn't think it was that good of a story and it wasn't well written. Anyhow, the publisher finally said, yeah, I think there's something here. But it went through multiple revisions before it came out into print. So again, the editing is so important.
Right.
So important. And a lot of times the editors don't get the publicity. They don't share in the glory. But I sort of make it a habit to mention editors.
Do you have any advice for aspiring writers to finding a good editor?
Well, you can't find a good editor. I think what you got to do is find a good agent.
Okay.
And an agent will find you the right publishing house who has good editors. And today it's not easy to find a good agent. It really is not easy.
Mm.
They only want to represent people who are big sellers or people who are known. Most don't want to take on the younger writers, which is unfortunate because that's where the next generation of writers
obviously.
You would think, but and I must say that a lot of the publishers aren't really interested in first-time writers. They want, oh, this is fantastic. Oh, this is, they want it's like the blockbuster movie.
You know, okay.
See, oh, everybody loves it. But you gotta spend the seed money. You gotta let the young people write, and then you'll find out who can really write. And nobody's born a writer. That doesn't happen. You're not born to write. It's an art and it's a skill, but you gotta practice it over and over again. And most writers will tell you that first novel they wrote was edited rather severely. And you can't be afraid of rejection.
Right. I can imagine that.
Yeah, I mean, it's going to happen. You remember this? It was based on a novel, but it was a movie. It was about the attempted assassination of Charles de Gaulle. It was a good movie, and the name's, for whatever reason, escapes me, but The Jackal, The Day of the Jackal.
Okay.
And it was a very good movie. And it was all based on a book by Frederick Forsyth. And Frederick Forsyth said, I wrote that novel in 4 weeks.
Wow, he got the bug and just... where do you get your inspiration to write books?
Let me just finish on, on Forsyth. That novel, Day of the Jackal, was rejected by 13 publishing houses before it was finally accepted by one.
And he had to rewrite it probably for each.
Believe me, for everyone it had to be rewritten.
And they brought it back, still didn't like it, and go to the next one. And
that's right.
Phew.
Not easy.
Yeah, that's tough. You know, that's perseverance though on the writer to keep going back to different ones.
Well, if you don't have a thick skin, this is not the thing you want to go into.
Yeah, I don't know if I'm that thick. I'll be like, I'll be upset. You know.
Well, it's sad when you get a poor review, and it's great when you get a wonderful review. And like somebody once told me, what's the truth? In between.
Mm-hmm.
In between. There was this wonderful writer who's now passed away, who I happen to know. His name was James Clavell. He wrote Shogun and...
Was that the miniseries?
Yeah.
Richard Chamberlain, I think,
exactly.
Or something? Okay.
He wrote the novel.
Oh,
and he once told me, he says, you got to be very careful when you put too much stock in reviews because there are extremes and the truth is really in the middle is how good something is.
Mm-hmm.
And then he told me about Hemingway, about what Hemingway said about critics. Hemingway said that critics are like generals who view a battle from a mountaintop far away from the battlefield.
Right.
And after the battle is over, the generals come down and shoot the survivors.
Wow. Yeah, that's an interesting quote. That was Hemingway's?
Huh? That was Hemingway.
Ernest Hemingway?
Yeah.
Oh, wow. That's interesting. Mr. Leonard Goldberg, where do you get your inspiration from? Is it you just...
It depends. I don't sit around and say, let me think of a book. I never do that. But I will either get it from a newspaper, a magazine article I read, or on occasion, I will see a movie or a television show.
Okay.
And I'll think, you know, there's something here. There's a way to turn this into a medical thriller. Let me give it a shot. And then what I do is I play with it inside my head for about 6 weeks. And if the bubbles come and I say, this is sounding better and better, then I'll write it. If after 3 or 4 weeks I kind of lose interest, I don't try. I don't say, gee, let me see if I can do this. If I don't have the interest, if it doesn't interest me or fascinate me, I just don't bother with it.
Do you give yourself any like time limits to write a book, or you have just as far as you know, once you get going, you say, "Well, I'm going to write it." Do you give yourself a time limit, or?
Well, I don't have the time limit, but my publisher does.
Okay,
they want a book every year.
Ooh,
and it takes me 6 or 7 months, sometimes 8 or 9 months, to write what I think is a good draft.
Okay.
And then it goes to the editor. And then we put it through 2 more drafts
right.
before we come up with a final product. So a book will come out every year or year and a half.
Mm-hmm.
But sometimes it's kind of tough. But
I can imagine.
But I've got a good publisher and I've got a wonderful editor. And they know how to say the right things. They don't say, give me another book. They say, gee, this is so interesting. Have you thought about doing
continuing on?
Right. It's a gentle push, and they're very good at it. And I've been very fortunate in that regard.
Do you ever try to, you ever get like several ideas at the same time and try to write more than one book?
Have you ever tried it? I tried that once. And I'm afraid to say that neither turned out very well. One was about an island off the coast of South Carolina that I thought was rather good. And another was about a mystery. And I would write a chapter for one and a chapter for the other. And I finally ended up with about 7 or 8 chapters for each. And I laid them aside, and a month or two later, I went back and read them. And I didn't bother to keep them. I just said, this is not good. It's not good. Because, you know, people, the reading public is kind of fickle. If you write a book that they love, they're with you. You write a book that's terrible, they...
abandon you.
Yeah, they say, you know, this. Somebody else must have written that first book, because this second book is... If you're very, very good, they say, well, look, everybody has a bad book now and then,
mm-hmm.
and they may give you another chance. But the reality is that you don't want to have a bad book.
Because you'll lose your core audience.
You will. There's no question about that.
Seems like a rough road a little bit.
Well, yeah, when you think about it, how many writers do you know? How many successful writers?
Oh, I don't know.
Pretty few.
Right.
And everybody wants to be a writer. Well, let me rephrase that. Everybody wants to have written a book. That's what they want. But the reality is it's tough. It's a tough go.
Yeah.
And you got to have thick skin, and you got to be able to stay the course. And if somebody, some publishing house rejects your novel, you got to be able to say, well, I've got to make it better. I'm not going to let this get me down. And if you got a good agent, they're the ones who will tell you, you know, you've still got a good novel here, but we've got to make changes. We've got to make this more attractive to the reading public.
That's wild. That's like, you know. When you started writing your books, were you still practicing medicine at the time? And you just, and then as far as you going on, the books were successful. And so you was like, you know.
Well, I had practiced, I had been in practice for 10 or 15 years, and I started writing as a hobby.
Okay.
And I kind of enjoyed it. I started off trying to write short stories, and I said, you know, I think I'll try a novel. And it worked pretty well. And I found myself trying to practice medicine and write at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And it was very difficult.
Okay.
You know, I'd get home from the office or from the medical center at 8 o'clock at night, have a quick bite to eat, and then start writing from 9 until 2 in the morning and hope the phone didn't ring.
Okay.
And I did it for a while, but it really is a tough way to go. It's, you know, you go to sleep at 2 in the morning and you have to get up at 6. It's not a very good life to lead. But then I had the opportunity to cut back on my practice so I could practice half-time and write half-time.
Okay.
And then when the books really started going well and the publishers were very, very happy with them, then I said, you know, I've practiced medicine now for 25, 30 years, whatever. It's time to step back.
And retire from that and go into writing full-time.
Yeah, and somebody, I think we mentioned this early in our conversation, someone once said to me, it's almost as if you reinvented yourself.
Yeah.
And people do that all the time. I mean, it's, sometimes you have to reinvent yourself.
Absolutely. You know, just take me, you know, I've never really done this before. This is my first time. You are actually my second solo interview.
You're doing very well.
I'm hoping, you know.
Oh, no, you're doing very well.
Hope they don't, you know, throw tomatoes at me when I leave today.
No, you're asking the right questions. I think to be a good interviewer, a couple of things that you have to avoid. Number one, you want to avoid awkward questions.
Right.
Number one. And number two is you want to keep the flow of conversation going. It's like, this is this and this is that. And that's what people like to hear.
Okay.
People don't want to have the yelling and the loud voices. That's not what they want to listen. They want to hear good common sense about books and what it takes to write them. And as I said before, everybody wants to write a book. But there was once this famous Southern lady who was a pretty good writer. Her name was Eudora Welty.
Okay.
Eudora Welty. Yeah. Eudora once gave a talk about one of her novels, and there were like 150 people in the audience listening. And at the end of the talk, this one woman, young woman, stood up and said, Miss Welty, how do you write a novel?
Hmm.
And Eudora said, well, first thing is, you got to sit down.
That's funny.
First, you got to sit down.
Wow, that's nice. Well, you've had a very full life, Mr. Goldberg. You're a doctor. You've practiced medicine for a long time. You've been writing a long time. You've had a very full life. You travel.
I've been fortunate. Mm-hmm. I was full-time at UCLA for 15 years, and I did a bunch of research and published over 100 papers, scientific papers.
Okay.
Got to travel the world, giving talks and lectures, and it was a good life. I enjoyed it.
What was your favorite place to go?
London.
London?
Yeah, as far as outside of America, it was London. I did a year sabbatical and lived in London for a year. And that's why I can talk about the streets of London so well when I write these novels.
Okay. Can you give me 1 second? Hello?
Hello.
Hi, baby. How you doing?
Jenny. Good. How are you?
Good. Say hello to our guest. Stephanie.
Yeah, go ahead.
Hi, Leonard. This is Jenny calling in from Maine.
Hey, Jenny.
How's it going?
It's going fine, thank you.
Good. I'm glad that you're in good hands with my co-host.
Yeah, JJ's doing a fine job.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've been listening, and you've been doing a very good job, and I've been very informed and entertained by this. I like listening to Leonard about his stories, and especially about some of the authors you've been talking about. It's just really crazy stuff. You knew all those wonderful people.
Well, they are kind of interesting people. And as JJ and I were talking about earlier, people have a misconception about what writers look like. You know, in Hollywood, they show you he's in a library, and there's a big bay window with a garden in the back. And his wife comes into the library and says, "Darling, are you almost done with the novel?" And he says, "Oh, just one more line, and I've got it." And then the next thing you know, they're having lunch.
Right.
And it reminds me, I'll tell you a very cute story. I was once at a party in Malibu.
Ooh.
And I went, at the time, I was smoking these little cigars, and I went out on the patio to have a cigar. And this little short fellow, chubby fellow's out there smoking cigars. And we had a conversation, and it turned out to be Mario Puzo, who
The
Godfather.
Oh,
wow.
Yeah, and he's charming, absolutely charming fellow. I mean, just charming. And he wanted to know about me. He said, "Tell me, where do you write? I said, "Well, I write on a counter in my kitchen. I like to write in the kitchen." He says, I do too.
Wow.
He said, "What uniform do you wear?" I said, "I wear sweats." He said, "Oh," he said, "I like to write in my underwear." And I always envisioned Puzo sitting at a kitchen table in his underwear writing The Godfather.
Right.
That would be very funny.
Yeah. On a bar stool.
Sitting in my underwear at the table. Oh, yeah. That's crazy.
A good guy, though. It was really a pleasure.
It sounds like a good guy.
Well, he didn't.
I just wanted to call in real quick and thank you, for coming on our show today. And I'm sorry I couldn't be there in person, but I'm out here with the family.
Well,
enjoying the Maine weather.
Hey, congratulations to your sister. And
thank you very much.
Let's hope everything is nothing but joy and happiness.
Yes, as do I.
All right.
Well, I just want to call in and say thank you and tell my co-host / business partner / husband that you're doing a wonderful job and keep up the good work.
Hurry up and come back, baby. Please, please, baby, come back.
Okay. I love you,
baby. I love you.
I will talk to you later. Okay. Bye. And thank you, Leanne Leonard, for coming on the show and entertaining us with your amazing books.
My pleasure, Jennifer, and thanks for the invitation.
Thank you, and we'll be talking again soon.
I hope so.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Bye. Peace out from Maine.
Bye. All right, Maine. Bye, baby. I love you.
Love you. Bye.
Bye. Yeah, that's my beautiful wife. Yeah. We have a good time. I had no clue before I met her I would actually be doing something like this. And well, it's exciting to me. You know, it's just something different. No one even have no idea, that I'll be able to do this.
You never know.
Until you try.
Well, somebody once told me that life is like floating on a lake.
Okay.
And you got to wait for the current to come pick you up. And when it picks you up, swim with all your might.
Right, with the current.
Yeah, swim with that current.
Oh, good. We have been here live in Sherman Oaks, California, talking to Arthur Leonard Goldberg about his two books and his very interesting life. The first book here, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes, is the first in a series of books. He said he's going to do five of these books. This is the first one, The Daughter of Sherlock Holmes. It is like an introduction book to the characters, and there's a mystery in here also. This is the first book. This is the second book in the series, Study of Treason, which is continuing with the Daughter of Sherlock Holmes. And this is his creation. He created these characters in his book, a couple of characters here. And this is a smart individual, man, a very interesting life. And I wanted to thank you, Mr. Leonard Goldberg, for coming. And I really appreciate you. Thank you very much, sir.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks again for the invite, and of course, my best to Jen.
Oh, thank you. When you get your next book, when it's done, it's published, and it's ready to release, please come back.
I shall, and I'll look forward to it.
Thank you, sir.
Thanks for that invitation.
Yes, we have been live with Jenny's Real Talk on the Block on LA Talk Radio Channel 1, and we are also featured on iHeartRadio, iTunes, YouTube, Spreaker, SoundCloud, Sonos, Google Play, Amazon Alexa, and Spotify. If you got any type of electronic device, you can pick us up and listen to us. We are live each and every Wednesday at 3 p.m., 3 to 3:50 Pacific Standard Time. I am the co-host, JJ The Muse, and I will be back next week. Same time, same channel. And please come again. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.
You're listening to Jenny's Real Talk on the Block with Jennifer DeVoe, only on LA Talk Radio.